A promotional fee has been paid by the sponsor of this program. For its editorial content, statements, views, and beliefs expressed by the sponsor do not reflect those of WOKV or Cox Media Group.
The Consumer Law Hour is brought to you by Farrah & Farrah.
The comments and opinions expressed on this radio program do not constitute legal advice and do not create an attorney-client relationship with you. If you have a legal problem, a formal consultation will be needed outside the confines of this radio program.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farrah on News 104.5 WOKV.
Well, good afternoon. A very happy Saturday to you. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. My name is Tim Tompkins. The show is produced by Scott Kushner behind the boards answering those phone lines, which are open. 904-340-1045. 904-340-1045. Eddie and Chuck, they are gone today. That is okay. We have two new attorneys for this show, anyway, in the studio with us. We have Sam, personal injury, as well as civil litigation. Welcome, Sam.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thanks for having us.
And we have Neil as well, a personal injury lawyer also.
Good morning. How are you?
Happy to be here. It's a beautiful day. Thankfully, we have a call coming in right now. But let's start off with you guys. What have you been working on recently that the listener would find compelling?
Well, I know before we came on the air here, Neil and I were talking about issues we have when clients call in. They've been in a serious situation that's led them to call us. We get the insurance disclosures, everything else, and then come to find out there is no coverage. And that seems to be one of the biggest issues, biggest problems, hurdles we have as personal injury attorneys is just that lack of coverage. Here in Florida, especially with UM coverage or BI coverage, bodily injury coverage, you're not required to carry any at all. And sometimes it can be tough to find that insurance. And I'll let Neil go on off that.
Yes, the kicker in Florida is, Sam had indicated, that technically you're not required by law to carry bodily injury. So what we always recommend for anybody who has a motor vehicle is to carry uninsured motorist coverage. Basically, what uninsured motorist coverage will do is protect you in the event that somebody ends up causing a car accident who, in fact, does not have bodily injury. In circumstances where there are significant damages, potentially a catastrophic injury, it's absolutely imperative that you protect yourself as well as protecting others by maintaining insurance for both the individuals that may be involved in the accident and specifically yourself with uninsured motorists.
Yeah, if you're involved in an accident, there's basically two pools of money that are going to be there to cover you, to cover your bills, you know, compensate you for your injuries. One of those is the bodily injury coverage, and that's optional for a driver in Florida to carry, and that would be from the other person's insurance that would compensate you. Now, if they don't have that, there's nothing else that can help you out except your own uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. So like Neil said, we can't stress enough the importance of having that UM coverage.
It's hard for some people. I know personally, my car insurance bill is already $150 a month.
Yep.
And then you're talking about adding on something else to it. I do hear, though, that it is the most affordable portion of insurance that you can have on your bill.
A lot of people carry bodily injury coverage, which would kick in if you hurt someone else to protect you. It would go if you injured someone else, your bodily injury would go there. If you already have that on your policy, adding UM isn't significantly more. Now, if you don't have any injury coverage whatsoever, then it's going to be a little bit more. But Neil, you got something?
Yeah. Oh no. To echo what Sam has said, if you're already carrying bodily injury, uninsured motorist coverage for most insurance companies is roughly about $8 to $12 a month more, which I understand is very significant, but in the long run, particularly if it becomes necessary, I can tell you, for example, myself, I was involved in an automobile accident where I was hit by a drunk driver who did not have enough liability coverage. I ended up having to have multiple surgeries, and had I not had uninsured motorist coverage, I would have been in a real significant problem. So, I, again, it's from both a legal standpoint and from a personal standpoint, I cannot stress enough that the importance of having uninsured motorist coverage.
And the phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. We have Sam and Neil filling in for Eddie and Chuck. Let's take this over to Jason over on the north side. Jason, thanks for calling in.
I'm on the south side, but that's okay. I want to know the difference in the in secured and unsecured uninsured motorists.
We, between Neil and I, you know, we're dealing with hundreds of, you know, these cases, and I can't say, you know, Neil and I look at each other, and I cannot say that I have heard of secured versus unsecured uninsured motorist coverage. And I've read, you know, I think between the two of us, a lot of policies. Have you ever seen anything like that, Neil?
I've not seen secured. Would you be referring to stacked coverage?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes, the difference between stacked and unstacked coverage is if you have multiple vehicles on your insurance policy, what a stacked policy does is, for example, if you have $100,000 uninsured motorist coverage and you have three vehicles on that policy, if it's a stacked policy, then you actually have available to you, in lieu of the 100, you have $300,000 in insurance coverage available, $100,000 for each vehicle on the policy.
Okay.
So I would go ahead and get, I mean, I would get the stacked if that's an option you're considering because, yeah, well, you know, coming from us, of course, it is what it is, but I'm going, you know, I would suggest covering yourself with as much insurance as possible and stacking that. If you have two cars, you're going to double it. You have three cars, you're going to triple your coverage. And when you stack it, it's a little cheaper than, you know, getting individual policies or anything like that.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I have two vehicles, one for me and one for my daughter. And I got $100,000, $50,000. But both of them are covered, but I just signed a new policy yesterday, and they were had on there stacked or unstacked, and I didn't know what the difference was.
Right. Either way, you have UM coverage, but the stacked would, of course, give you that additional. It would double the coverage.
Yeah. And
oh, okay.
The thing with the coverage here, here's always the thing, $100,000 to any normal individual, that sounds like a lot of money, and it is. It really is a lot of money. However, in instances where there's an automobile accident that involves some sort of surgery or a significant medical treatment, it is amazing how quickly $100,000 can just disappear. We recommend that you cover yourself and protect yourself as much as possible. Obviously, we don't want to put anyone in any type of financial bind with regards to insurance premiums, but if it's at all possible, cover yourself as much as possible.
Yeah, because I own a business, and that's the reason why I have that coverage is to, I don't want my daughter to get into an accident, and then I'm up the creek, you know?
All right.
That was the whole point in getting that much coverage. But all right, guys, I appreciate you. Thank you very much. You guys have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Jason.
904-340-1045 to get a call in. Again, that's 904-340-1045. We have Fred over on the west side. Fred, welcome to the program.
How you doing today?
Good.
Pretty good. My daughter had called in here a few weeks back, and she had hired a lawyer here in town. And 2 years rolled by, and he admitted that he let the guy slip through the cracks. He went so far as had him subpoenaed, paid $3,500 plus $500 to have him subpoenaed. And then all of a sudden he leaves town. And when we do finally get a hold of him, he says he's no longer with that business.
Fred, real quick, is this reference to a divorce? Is that what's going on here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to clarify so we knew what we were dealing with.
Well, actually, it's dealing with now trying to get the lawyer to do what he was paid to do, and we called the Florida Bar, and the Florida Bar suggested that, well, they sent him a letter, and he finally called, and he said, well, I'm too busy to do it now, and I'm not doing that no more, so I'm going to give you a number to another lawyer that's free, and all he's got to do is go before the judge 15 minutes, and we've not heard from the new lawyer and ain't heard from him, so we're still out.
Well, Fred, I don't know. You know, it sounds like you're in a tough situation, and that situation shouldn't happen for anyone in any industry. You know, you may just want to just independently find a different attorney. But I mean, I would give your current attorney all the chances you can.
Well, can I carry him to small claims court? Because it's been over 2 years.
And if when you're talking about the small claims, is that to recover the money that you guys have paid to him?
Yes, sir.
Now, when were you copied on the communication on the letter that was sent from the Florida Bar?
No, I wasn't. I'm just helping my daughter out.
Okay.
She didn't want to call. They did contact her.
Right. What I would probably recommend, and I know it can be sometimes difficult, but I would contact the Florida Bar once again first of all, to find out what communication they've had with the attorney. So you can know specifically what did they request of them, what did they tell them to do and whatnot. When in family law, you pay the retainer up front. The attorney is required to provide an accounting for the work that they've done and that they're billing for. So your daughter would be entitled to that. And then once you receive that, then it would give you a better instance to kind of move forward with what your options are. If he's done the work and it, just from what you've told us, it doesn't sound like he's done enough to have exhausted the $3,500. However, if he has, that does put you in a bit of a circumstance with regards to that. If he's unable to account for that, then you may want to look into that. But I would definitely contact the Florida Bar again to obtain any and all communications that they've had with that attorney, and then it will give you a better idea on how to proceed forward.
Well, I can tell you there's not a single lawyer I know that wants to hear from the Florida Bar. So going through them is going to be one of your most powerful remedies here. And just kind of, I would just, like Neil said, follow up with them and see if they can help you out a little more.
Well, she's already called them three times and they have not refused, or they have not called her back. It's been like a week.
Right. Give it another shot.
But I appreciate it.
All right.
Appreciate the phone call on that one.
Good luck to you.
Coming up on a break, we do have Sam and Neil filling in for Eddie and Chuck. Get those phone calls in, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. The Consumer Law Hour brought to you by Farrah and Farrah each and every Saturday at noon right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Filling in for Eddie and Chuck today, we have Neil and Sam. My name is Tim Tompkins. The show is produced by Scott Kushner. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Talking about all things legal this morning. And I'm excited because we always have Eddie and Chuck on the program, for however many years it's been. But now we get new voices, new ideas here on the radio program. Something fresh to talk about.
That's correct, and Neil's put me on the spot with coming up with a subject matter here, so I guess just because
I gave you a really long lead-in.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Just, I guess because it's kind of cliche personal injury law, I guess we could talk about just kind of how to know if you may have a claim for a premises liability case, or as more commonly referred to as a slip and fall or trip and fall. So, Neil, what do you got for me?
Well, I guess the first thing to put out there is in the state of Florida, there's no such thing as strict liability as to premises owners. Basically, what that means is that there's no individual cause of action solely because you are injured on somebody's property. Basically, what you have to prove and what you have to allege is that the premises owner failed to maintain the property in a manner that is safe for the individuals who come on it. And either that by willfully doing something that causes or creates a dangerous condition, or they failed to properly inspect and maintain the property, and that caused the accident also. So
I think the biggest crux that we kind of have trouble with as attorneys making these claims is the notice. And what I mean by that is the premises, the property owner, you know, they have a duty to if there's you know, a dangerous condition on their property and they knew or should have known about it, that's when they're going to be liable. Without that notice, it's hard to make a claim.
Absolutely. And one thing I cannot stress enough is if you are on a property, particularly a business property, and you have been injured in any way, please make sure to notify the property, the business owner, fill out an incident report right there that day so that you can document it. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you how many times we have cases come in with individuals with legitimate claims that, you know, it was I slipped and fell. I thought I'd be fine. 2 days later, I didn't, you know, I realized I'm not fine. But they never notified the business owner that the accident occurred, and we have no way to prove that they were actually on the premises when it happened.
Right. It's at that point it becomes more of a he said, she said, and it makes it much more difficult for the client, and in effect, it makes it much more difficult for the attorneys as well.
Now, does the business owner, if they have cameras, they have like a right to give you guys that camera feed, or?
So off the bat, we send them what's called a evidence preservation letter, and that's a letter notifying them that they have to preserve any relevant evidence in the event that we have to file a lawsuit on this. We send those right off the bat. Now, they are not obligated to show us those unless we subpoena those, and I think Neil has a little more experience in that than I do.
Yes. Basically, what the Florida courts have recently ruled that the defendants do not actually have to provide those until after the defense or the plaintiff has been deposed. So we can start the litigation and have never seen it, proceed through litigation, still not see it, and you know, so we don't have that information until significantly and well into the litigation process.
You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Neil and Sam filling in for Eddie and Chuck. We're going to be talking to Dre and Mark coming up next. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Jacob Pickering with a look at your drive. Heading out to St. Augustine. Don't go anywhere. Consumer Law Hour brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Each and every single Saturday, it's a free hour of legal advice at noon right here on News 104.5 WOKV. We do have Sam Neal filling in for Eddie and Chuck today. My name is Tim Tompkins, Scott Kushner producing the show. Let's go ahead and take this over to Mark. And again, the phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. Mark, thank you so much for staying on hold through the break.
Hi, thank you. My question is, I am meeting someone at the tax collector's office next week to sell a car to them. What paperwork other than signing the title over do I need to complete to make sure that I have no liability associated with the car moving forward?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for the call. Basically, what I would recommend is obviously you'll need this title signed over as well as an actual bill of sale indicating that the vehicle has been sold from you to the new purchaser. Now, is the car encumbered by a loan, or is it strict cash? Okay. That's really basically it. And then as soon as you have the executed bill of sale, I'd provide that to your insurance company, advising them immediately that the car has been sold. And I believe that that should pretty much shield you from any sort of potential liability.
Yeah, Mark, just to add to that, and my experience, this actually happened with one of my clients recently. They had, and I know this seems like common sense, but in that when you're doing everything and doing all this and transferring titles and the whole bit, managed to leave all their insurance cards in the glove compartment. That car got in a wreck, and then the cops pulled that insurance card out of there, and it was associated on the crash report. It didn't find the old owner liable, but it just caused a mess for him. So, you know, make sure you clean all that stuff out. I know it seems like common sense, but, you know, stuff can get forgotten.
Good advice. Is there anywhere that you know of where I can download a template for a bill of sale?
I would guess on LegalZoom.com they would probably have something like that if I had to. Okay.
Yeah, you know, if you just, you know, a bill of sale is a pretty basic document. It's more just a receipt, if anything, right? Mm. So, I mean, just the most important thing, yeah, I would do what Neil said and maybe get someone to draft one for you. But the most important thing at the very minimum is just make sure everything's in writing with as much detail as possible.
So I just typed in vehicle bill of sale on Google, and there's like four or five hits right at the very top of the page that all have downloadable forms right there,
there you
for
go.
You. So
there you
super
go.
Easy.
Great advice. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep, thanks, Mark.
Thanks for the call.
Appreciate the phone call. 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045, if you'd like to get a call in right now. The Consumer Law Hour. Eddie and Chuck gone this week, taking a much-needed and much-deserved, I guess I should say, vacation. Sam and Neil filling in from Fair and Fair.
Well, before the break, we were going over premises liability cases and how to make sure that you are – or you have done what you need to preserve any sort of liability case you may have against the business owner. Another recommendation that we just cannot stress enough is if it's a slip and fall, if there's a wet substance on the floor, if there's some sort of any type of substance on the floor that causes you to fall in that business, make sure, first of all, Pictures. You cannot take enough pictures at the scene. Second of all, is the clothes, shoes, everything that you're wearing at the scene, keep those on you. Do not get rid of them. Don't sell them. Don't throw them away. Preserve those items. If the case goes into litigation, you will absolutely need them.
Go ahead and take a phone call. We have Dre, who, thank you so much for calling back. Dre over in St. John's, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I know you're not real estate attorneys, but maybe you can have some advice for me. I recently bought my house from Fifth Third Bank. I don't know if I can say the name or not. But they stated that they were representatives of the state MCC program, in which they are. But they didn't disclose to me. They wouldn't be able to give me that part of my loan until I was the due closing the next day. And at that point, they had exacerbated the seller's patience. So I didn't have no recourse but to go ahead and buy or take the chance of losing my house. And what the MCC is, mortgage certification, which it would gave me,
So, Dre, I appreciate the question. This is a pretty detailed legal question. Like you said, we aren't necessarily real estate attorneys. I don't know. I would recommend just getting our number from the producer and giving us a call to talk with the attorney in a lot more depth. This seems like a pretty detailed thing. I don't know, Neil.
No, I agree with Sam. When you're dealing with the financing investigations and mortgage certifications, There's a lot of parts to it. There's
a lot of documentation.
A lot of documentation. So that this would be, it would appear to be an issue that would need to be gone over in detail. So I'd absolutely recommend you, so that we could call you and kind of go through it in detail and see if there is any potential recourse.
And if there is, or when you, you know, when we give you a call or when you call in, if it's not something that we can answer at that time or help you out with, you know, we can absolutely point you in the right direction to get you the help that you do need for that issue.
So, Trey, stay on the line. Our producer, Scott's going to go ahead and get your number. And then Eddie or Chuck will give you a call on Monday. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, if you want to get a call in to Sam and Neil today. I'm taking this over to Dave over in Palm Coast. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Yeah, my wife is in real estate. 6 months ago, she sold a house. The owner and the seller's disclosure put that the house, the roof was 8 years old. Well, after 6 months, I guess they've had some roof problems, and they're saying that the people that had inspected the roof said the roof's more than 8 years old. So now they sent a lawyer's letter suing the previous owner and my wife. So I was just wondering what kind of liability, as a real estate agent, my wife has.
Well, from a real estate standpoint, the only liability I could see for your wife is if somehow she was – if she had the information that there were leaks at the time of the sale. Obviously, if the inspections were held and the inspections did not uncover any type of leaks at the time, just the fact that the roof is an older roof does not automatically create a liability situation, particularly a professional liability.
It's my understanding that your wife is the real estate agent, as I understand it, or the individual agent selling the house. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So again, not my area of expertise, but you know, I think, you know, as long as, you know, she wasn't concealing this issue, you know, if she knew about it and then went ahead and,
and
covered it up, that's a different story. As far as, you know, how the rest goes, again, not my area, but I think as long as she didn't, you know, conceal it or, you know, take part in any fraudulent activity, it's going to be tough to make a claim against her as the agent.
Well, they had a home inspection, and that came back fine with the roof and everything. The inspector was fine. Now, she asked for a copy of the home inspection and the roofing report, and they said that they would give it to her when the previous owner said how much he was going to pay him. I was like,
right.
You know, so anyways, they did have a home inspection that came clean, you know, when they did it. Now, it was six months ago, too.
Right. And that would, I mean, that would seem to be the better source of the better recourse would be against the inspectors as opposed to the agent to establish agency liability. Like Sam said, basically they would have to prove some sort of willful concealment of the condition. And like I said, just there being an older roof on the house would not automatically qualify for that.
Right. I mean, again, not an expert, just to cover myself, you know, this isn't my area, but just from what you're telling me, you know, I would be surprised, just based on the information you're giving me, if your wife could be held liable for that roof that passed that home inspection and she wasn't concealing anything.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one, Dave.
Thanks for the call.
All right.
904-340-1045 to get a call in. Taking this over to Larry all the way in South Carolina. Larry, welcome. Thanks for calling into the show.
Okay. Thank you for having me here. The situation is that I was in a slip and fall injury at a South Carolina medical facility pool area. And what happened was they were doing some reconstruction work, and they had detoured the pool traffic down a hallway that had just recently been, had the floor replaced on it with terrazzo floor, and it was polished and slick as glass. And in the situation, I fell, and when I fell, I ripped my rotator cuff out, My arm came completely out of the socket. I did report it to them. It didn't occur to me at that point to make photographs. I have contacted about four lawyers who send me back letters, something like, after careful review, at this time, they're not in a position to help me in this matter. Mm-hmm. And so this has happened about, as I said, one of the attorneys said, if I could go to the doctor who saw me subsequently and get him to write a letter saying that in his opinion that the cause of my problem was because of this fall. But they are exactly related.
Well, I can...
The whole top of my rotator cuff got ripped out in this situation, and I was a witness there.
Right. So, you know, again, I don't know, you know, about Neil, but I'm not licensed in South Carolina. The information I can give you is going to be based on my knowledge of Florida law for a premises liability case like this. And as far as the one attorney telling you to get a letter relating the injuries, of course, that's important. But I think, you know, based on your history of having attorneys deny representing you, it's going to be, at this point, it sounds to me like they're having more of an issue finding liability on the property owner. But that's just my initial thought here, just hearing what you're telling me. I don't know if Neil wants to add to that.
And basically, from what it kind of sounds like, is that there may be an issue of like I said, with regards to strict liability, there has to be what is deemed as a inherently dangerous condition on the premises, and it kind of sounds like, and again, like Sam said, without having more of the facts available and whatnot, that it does seem like the attorneys are having difficulty relating that condition to to causing your slip and fall. What I would, again, I'm not licensed in South Carolina either, so I'm not really certain as to the standard that you have to prove for slip and fall. My expertise is in Florida. But what I would recommend is if you could give the producer your phone number. We do have attorneys in South Carolina that we work with on regular basis, and we'll be more than happy to coordinate contact with them and see if we can get another opinion as to your case.
Oh, that would be just terrific.
All right. Well, Larry, stay on hold right there. Scott, our producer, is going to go ahead and get your information. Eddie or Chuck will give you a call on Monday. And again, this is a Consumer Law Hour brought to you by Farrah and Farrah each and every Saturday at noon right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Coming up on a break right now, but when we get back, we are going to talk to Julius in Daytona Beach, an auto accident. Contact an attorney who wouldn't take it. Why? Sam and Neil chiming in on that one. Welcome back. The Consumer Law Hour brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Sam and Neil filling in for Eddie and Chuck today, going over to Julius in Daytona Beach. Julius, thanks for calling in.
Yes, hello. I wanted to make sure we're on the right page. This is a automobile repair, not accident.
Okay.
Okay. I have a 87 Mazda RX-7. I took it to a repair shop, aftermarket repair shop in South Florida to have the engine rebuilt and put back in it. This started in 2012. He kept the car for 5 years. I had to pay a substantial down payment to get it started. Through the interim of that, he started coming up with different excuses. His mother was dying and got bit by spiders and all this different details that I can't go all the way into. But when I finally got the car back, found out that all the parts that I had purchased new were not in the car. The car would not run. The day that he gave it to me, he hid the car from me until he got the final payments, which only took me 2 weeks to make the final payment, and the car fell on his face. So I had to take it to another mechanic. They had to open it back up. They said the engine was totally destroyed. I had to pay the same amount over again, which is a little over 10 grand. I tried to get attorneys to take the case, and I can't get any attorney online or face-to-face to take this case.
Well, Julius, I'm very sorry to hear that you've gone through that. And it's a very difficult situation because the bottom line is these type of cases aren't generally what we call a contingency fee cases. These are more of an hourly basis cases where you would have to pay a retainer up front to really justify the amount of work that it would take to litigate that.
That doesn't mean you don't have a claim or you shouldn't make a claim. Yeah. It's just, you know, but there's going to be certain types of attorneys that will handle this. But what I would recommend, and I apologize, you know, that I can't give you better advice right this moment, as we are, you know, a little short on time here. But, you know, with the details involved and all the damages, by damages, I mean everything that this guy has done to wrong you. You know, you're going to want to get all that organized and give us a call. And so we have a little more time to talk about this in depth with you.
Okay.
Julius, we're going to go ahead and put you on hold right now. And then our producer, Scott's going to go and take your number. Okay. We have George in St. Augustine.
Yes, sir. I was hit and another car in front of me were parked at a stoplight, red light. And got hit in the back by about a 7,000-pound Stanley Steamer-type truck. And we had car damage and personal damage, personal injury, both of us. And the car was 1 month old, had 633 miles on it, and my car. And so I'm wondering about diminished value and or what we do with our physical problems.
Well, the first thing we want to get you, you know, make sure, worry about you first and make sure we get you okay. And from what you're telling me, you absolutely have a valid claim here. As far, was your car totaled?
No.
Okay, so you can make what's called a diminished value claim, and I know we have someone else on hold asking a similar question. And we actually at Fair and Fair, we have an expert that we work directly with, and he's very well respected in the area. He does it for a lot of dealerships. He'll look at your car, and he'll be able to come up with a very reasonable amount of how much that diminished value is.
So, George, hold on real quick, and Scott's going to go ahead and take your number. And someone from Fair and Fair will give you a call on Monday, as well as Robert and Charles. What you guys can always do is call Fair and Fair directly, 904-549-6434. As well, again, that is 904-549-6434. Neil and Sam, thank you so much for filling in today.
Thanks for having us. It's good being here.
Coming up, we have a look at your drive heading out to the beaches. Don't go anywhere.